Hey, Jim, can you hear me?
Yeah, I'm making on some headphones.
Great. How are you?
I'm good. You know, we got the new era going. Everything's great. It's so weird sitting in China these days and looking at what's going on in the States, and you start to value a professional dictatorship over the amateur when it's going on in the U.S.
I'm Steve Stein, and this is Inside Asia. And yes, that was the voice of Jim McGregor. If you've been paying attention to the news in recent weeks, there have been some major developments in China with some serious potential political and economic consequences. On the political front, the country's president Xi Jinping has just done what no one thought would ever happen again. He's consolidated power and received a mandate from the 3,000-strong National People's Congress to rule China indefinitely. This marks the end of nearly three decades of collective power, where institutions were designed to replace personalities as a framework for governing. Meanwhile, trade tensions are mounting. Trump's unilateral move to apply tariffs and punish China may backfire, with China now threatening a trade war in return. To provide context and perspective, we call Jim McGregor, China expert, senior corporate advisor, and friend of the show. I asked him if Xi's grab for power comes as a surprise. Is it a reflection of what's going on in the world, or just something Xi thinks he can get away with at a time of China's rise to power?
I think there's a number of ways to look at this. And of course, it's all speculation because nobody knows the inside thinking of the party. You can only look at what they do and what they say and try to, you know, extrapolate what's going on. From his point of view, if you look at it from his point of view, I think he thinks he has an opportunity now to move China way ahead, to really become a global leader. And he wants no interference and no nonsense. And I'm sure he's very certain of his own skills and ability and leadership. And, you know, you probably get pretty full of yourself when no one can question you. And with the mess that the U.S. is and the disarray in Europe, I think they see that this is China's chance. And with the Belt and Road Initiative, you know, there's a lot going on there. And, you know, what that is also that's looked at is moving their own standards for everything from electricity to manufacturing and, of course, to telecoms. You know, they'll be able to push 5G around the world, and which is very important. And, you know, the thought was, you know, why is he doing this? You know, this is a real, real in-your-face move to do this. Why in 5 years doesn't he just make himself party chairman and let somebody else be president?
Right.
That would be a much softer way of doing this. But also, if you look at that, then he would not be able to meet with world leaders because he'd be head of the party. And China is so protocol oriented that, you know, he could not meet with, you know, the president of the United States and England, et cetera, because protocol wise, he wouldn't be the government head. He would be the party head, which they always try to pretend is, you know, behind the scenes a bit.
But Jim, just for listeners, you know, when I mean, you look at the titles he now, you know, holds: General Secretary of the Communist Party, President of the People's Republic of China, Chairman of the Central Military Commission. I mean, he holds top offices across party, state, and military. You know, what's possibly left, and why does he need to make this, you know, generational grab, the ultimate penultimate leader type of decision? I mean, it just seems like he had it all anyway.
One thing that was not done at the Party Congress last year was to designate a successor. There's usually a soft designation of a successor. It's not said, but from the lineup, you can see who it is. He didn't do that. So maybe there was a lot of pressure within the party on what are you going to do on that? And they came back and said, well, here's what we're going to do. We're not going to have one. Is this also a show of strength or a show of weakness? You know, did he have to do this because there's an opposition within the party? You just don't know.
You don't know.
Remember, this is a party full of very capable, educated, often worldly people who have been able to have a say because it was, you know, more and more ever since Deng came in was moving towards a consultative inter-party discussion on policy. And then you would all stick together. He is taken that away, and it's all Leninist top-down. These people are now having to sit around and study Xi Jinping thought and not allowed to make decisions. They've got to do whatever comes from the top, and they're under great scrutiny. And at the same time, they've started this new supervision commission that's whose job it's going to be is to make people sure people are doing their jobs. Well, so it's working so well. Why do you need that?
Yeah, so it is. I mean, it does feel it's of the ilk of the Mao Zedong, cult of personality, era. It sounds like he's borrowing a page from Mao's leadership to some degree, albeit in very different times under different circumstances.
Well, I suppose China scholars would say they're just reverting to the norm, right? I mean, they had an imperial system for a few thousand years, and I just think that they feel that they, you know, at least he and the people around him, you know, he's got Wang Guning, who is now on the Central Standing Committee, is, you know, he's the ideology guy. He's, you know, he's on the Central Standing Committee, the top party body. He's never managed anything. He's been in Zhongnanhai, the Chinese Kremlin for the last 15 years doing ideology. But he's the guy that really backed the new authoritarians. And the feeling was that by devolving power out to the provinces and to the ministries and to localities where these party guys could be fairly entrepreneurial in developing their economy and, pulling the country out of poverty, that was working pretty well. But the result was the party was losing power, that power is really dissipating. And partly that's quite true. I mean, the amount of corruption was going on was off the charts. So Wang Guning's thing is everything comes back to the center, and it's all one man, strong man power. And that's where we've gone. And, she's a true believer. He's a true believer. He spent his whole career in the countryside, except for just a few years, not in the countryside, but out of the provinces. So, I think he's a true believer in the party and saving the party.
Jim, what are the, ultimate implications of this? I mean, in some ways, as democracy is revealing its warts and its issues and its inability to get things done, authoritarian powers are demonstrating that, central leadership actually has the ability to ramrod, things through, whether it's global initiatives, whether it's, domestic policies, whether it's economic policy. Is there any upside here at all? I mean, if in fact China stays the course and becomes a responsible global citizen, could this actually be a good thing?
Well, I don't know. Good thing for who? I mean, it may keep China on the straight and narrow, accomplishing all the plans that the party has. But, succession is the Achilles heel of an authoritarian system, and Deng knew that. People that are in power too long with ultimate power, they kind of can lose it and forget what they're there for. And it's a check and balance on an authoritarian system to change leaders on a regular basis. So an unchecked authoritarian system could turn into something that nobody here wants. There's a lot of people here comparing it to a different form of the Cultural Revolution with all the propaganda that's going on. There's a lot of people here that are very worried about this.
So it's both internal as well as external, because a lot's being made of it outside of China. But I was going to ask you, what's the general impression internally? Is there a lot of support and patriotism and nationalism that's kind of rallying now, behind this as China moves off into the world? Or are people hesitating, a little bit uncertain as to what this means?
Well, in private conversations, a lot of people are very worried. I think the younger people just are a bit oblivious. People that have been through the Cultural Revolution that I've talked to are very worried about this. It's the cult of personality, the unchecked power, the power forever. They've seen this before, and it worries them quite a bit. What do you see here? Well, you don't see anything, because this is a very, very tight place now, and you can't speak publicly. You cannot say a word negative about Xi Jinping publicly. It's the way China is today, and children in schools are, they're learning to sing songs about him and draw pictures of him, and they even got school children here studying the Xi Jinping thought from the Party Congress.
Does he have his version of the Little Red Book out there yet, or coming to be released?
He's got big books. You know, there's a lot of books that are published on what he says. So, you know, there is a chance that history will show that this was a step too far. That you know, you know, 5 years from now, 10 years from now, we may look back and say this was just a step too far. China was going in another direction, and they were willing to put up with a lot of changes, but this might have been the one that was just over the top. I don't know. But it's very different from where China was going before.
This is Inside Asia. More in a moment from my conversation with author and senior corporate advisor, Jim McGregor. I'm Steve Stein, and this is Inside Asia. My guest is China expert Jim McGregor, and our topic is President Xi Jinping and his move to become China's perpetual leader. I kick off the second part of our conversation by asking Jim to put this in a global perspective. With democracies around the world in apparent retreat and authoritarianism on the rise, to what degree is Xi's grab for power a reflection of global economic and political disarray? And this comes at a moment when economically, China may also be on the verge of a trade war with the U.S. What are the implications?
Oh, Jesus. I mean, I think China's been very quiet about the steel and aluminum because they realize what a stupid move it is. You know, China, you know, China has flooded the world with, steel, and that's why prices are down. But Chinese steel going into America is already subject to tariffs and trade barriers. So it's a very small part of the market. So this actually is good for China in some ways, because it'll all of America's allies are the ones that are getting whacked, and that will pull them away from America, and that's good for China. So I think they're just watching this clown show every day, and you know, just trying to see where their advantages are going to be. And you know, the Trump White House is a gift that keeps on giving to China.
And in the meantime, you also have these protectionist moves in the U.S. with the Committee on Foreign Investment, or also known as, is it CFIUS? Is that right? CFIUS, which is now kind of determining whether or not there are security risks with foreign investment in U.S. technology. What are your thoughts on that? I think that's just recently, was it Qualcomm, Broadcom, which is a Singapore-based group with, I guess, Chinese investment backing, made a bid for Qualcomm, and the committee stood up and had something to say about it. What are your thoughts there?
Well, actually, I'm in support of that. I mean, you know, with Made in China 2025, China has a plan to dominate the supply chains of the future and all major technology. And the key to being able to do that is going out and buying foreign technology and foreign technology companies. The problem is, once China buys a foreign technology company, that company is in China, and it's a Chinese company now, and it's subject to none of the restrictions the foreign companies are. It's got all the financing it needs. It's got all the market opening it needs, and it can kill the other foreign companies in this market, in that industry, and then also beat them globally because it's the market of this size. So, you know, nobody wants to close up America, and it's very uncomfortable to be rejecting mergers and acquisitions because America prides itself on its openness. But we've never faced anything like China Inc. and Made in China 2025. So it's a complicated world now. You just wish, you know, you'd hope that we have smart people dealing with it.
Jim, is this CFIUS then a kind of form of subtle retaliation? I mean, as I think you just alluded to, the idea that foreign multinationals who want to go into China have been required to release certain technology or IP in order to gain access to the Chinese market. And now the U.S. noticing this and recognizing that protectionist nature of that requirement is now retaliating by saying, no, we're not going to let you grant you access by buying U.S. big tech companies. Or are they just two parallel issues that have implications around technology?
Well, retaliation, what it is, it's really waking up to a trend and trying to protect the U.S. Mm-hmm. And Europe's doing the same thing. I mean, the whole world right now is worried about this. And I mean, the number of companies that they bought in Germany, as the Germans are up in arms because the German companies are easier to buy because they're often family owned and they're $5, $10, $20 billion companies. You know, the U.S. companies are all, you know, mostly connected to conglomerates and they're harder to buy. But no, this is a global issue. China, you know, this is an overreach by China. If China wants, you know, China wants to build a leading tech sector, is one thing, but it's all about domination. They've even got quotas set up on, you know, by this year, you have to have 70% of the market here has to be Chinese companies and, in this industry and that industry, from electric vehicles to renewable energy to new materials to cloud computing to artificial intelligence, you name it. And so the world sees this as a threat, and rightly so. China's overreached. They really just have overreached, and so that's why this is coming back at them.
You know, Jim, it's just we've touched on this before, but I can't help but when I hear you say this, also point out that, you know, couched in different terms, U.S. rise in economic and economic power. No one called that overreach. They just called it U.S. Market dominance a U.S. Economic expansion. Why is this any different? It's not that China is doing anything illegally. They're buying companies, you know, through the markets. They're deploying the right mechanisms. They're not stealing these away from us. And yet somehow it's overreach. Help me understand that.
This is the Chinese government doing it. That's what there's bills in Congress now to expand CFIUS. And one of the things in those bills is tracing the money. You know, if the money's coming from some PLA funds and state funds, I mean, that's what the difference is. It's the government. This is not industry doing it. It's the government. Now, Broadcom is an interesting matter because that's a Singapore company, and it's not coming out of the, you know, the MIT or some agency here. They may have Chinese money, but I think that's also just trying to keep a crown jewel of the U.S. in the U.S. and completely, because it's so important for all the telecom standards in 5G. But it's China Inc. and it's not free enterprise. Because they don't have to make a profit, they can kill profit-making companies. If China buys up enough chip companies, they can just do what they did with solar, flood the market with cheap chips and kill the other companies that have to get a profit, but they don't because they're state-owned.
Well, that's a great point, you know, and maybe, you know, doing something, although, wow, what a huge investment in order to deliver on that strategy, and then, you know, leaving a group like Huawei or somebody else in a market pole position when it comes to 5G. I mean, that's a really interesting point. What's the feeling about that? I mean, is that part of the reason why they're blocking, or is it just, like you say, protecting what are considered to be great U.S. tech companies and deep tech investments?
Well, remember, all of this technology that's happening now is the tech of the future, and it's all, you know, everything is about artificial intelligence and connectivity. It's a race for who's going to own the 5G standards. And China's got a pole position already, really. Huawei has 80% market share in some of the European countries, and all the Belt and Road money that's going into communications is, going to lead to China's standards there. Artificial intelligence is, there's a lot of weaponizing of artificial intelligence. It's, the wars of the future are going to be fought by weapons, fueled by artificial intelligence. So this is, it's looked at as a national security issue. And I can understand China. Of course, China has to do this. They're a great power. They've got money. They want to do it. But again, they just do it with dumping a lot of state money, which will crush other companies that have to have a profit and have to do normal business.
Yeah, great point. So it's a level playing field you're referencing. It doesn't exist, and therefore that's what we need to be cautious of.
Yeah, I mean, let's see an American company try to come into China today and buy a technology company here. You know, the world's never faced anything like China before. And, I've been living here a long time, and I give the Chinese people a lot of credit for what they've accomplished. But I'm worried that their government is overreaching so much that they're really going to damage, Chinese entrepreneurs' ability to do global business.
Right.
We've already seen this with Jack Ma and MoneyGram. I mean, they were blocked from buying MoneyGram. Well, look, under WTO, payments were open. PayPal should have been able to come in here. None of them were allowed to come in. The credit cards were severely restricted. So Jack Ma, being a great entrepreneur, built a very profitable payment system. But now if he can go out and buy the world's payment systems, he could kill PayPal globally because they were blocked here, which allowed him to build his business. So he's now a victim of their policy.
Yeah. So it is a form of retaliation. It's like we can't do it there, you can't do it here. And we're just going to apply a different mechanism for denying you. But in effect, that is what just happened with that example, isn't it?
Yes. It's more and more, you know, the word reciprocity is more and more prominent now in Washington and in Brussels. And we'll see where it goes. MoneyGram also carries worries about data. You know, that's a lot of people's data. People just don't trust anything owned by China now. Anything owned by China has lost the trust of the world. Because what are they going to do with the data after all the hacking that's gone on, all the OPM data, Office of Personnel Management data, the 100 million or whatever. I forget the number, but, you know, tens of millions of American government workers' records were stolen. It's a mess up there when it comes to technology and connectivity and the internet and data. Meanwhile, the whole world's getting more connected.
Yeah, well, here a new episode of Katie Bar the Door, right? Every nation to itself, and this is it's fascinating to watch right now. And we're seeing even Mexico now. I mean, the countries that you thought were kind of on their way are closing the gates. So I thank you once again, Jim, for your comments and for your input. Always wonderful talking to you. Thanks so much.
All right, Steve, take it easy.
That was my conversation with China expert, senior corporate advisor, and Inside Asia go-to Jim McGregor. And now it's time for our Asia Insider Minute, that part of the show where we tie a bow around what we've just heard or maybe even venture an opinion on what it all means. More often than not, it's a question. We arrive at the end of a conversation and realize it's actually just the start of another. The question this week, that topic to raise around the water cooler or dinner table, is this. Are we staring down the barrel of Chinese overreach? McGregor says authoritarianism of any ilk, if unchecked, is a bad thing. While the world muddles about, isolationism festers, and democracies falter, are we seeing China quietly and assuredly filling the global power vacuum? How will this play out? Will the authoritarian tendencies of the Chinese Communist Party edge the country in a direction that results in a corrosive and counterproductive global distrust of all things Chinese? Or do we see the arrow of time pointing in precisely the opposite direction, where American trade wars and isolationism, combined with the dazzling accelerative disruptive force of digital technology, 5G networks, and a ferocious work ethic that catapult China to a global leadership position? It's not a bedtime story, and it's certainly not a happily ever after tale, but make no mistake, it is happening. It's like that movie, All About Eve, when our heroine Eve, played by Anne Baxter, glimpses her idol Margot Channing, played, of course, by the great Betty Davis. It's that moment in the film where she makes up her mind to take over, to seize the reins of power. As Eve says, actually, let's let her say it.
Fasten your seatbelts. It's going to be a bumpy night.
Thanks for listening, and until next time, I'm Steve Stein saying, come in from the outside on Inside Asia.